It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up on Food Friday, we're looking for your cooking plans for 2022. Let us know what you want to learn and try in the kitchen or on the grill. First, large private businesses will not have to require workers to be vaccinated against COVID-19 or be subjected to weekly tests. In a 6-3 ruling, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down President Biden's vaccine mandate for employers. It would have affected businesses with 100 or more employees. It's about 84 million people involved. It also would have required unvaccinated workers to wear masks indoors at the office. But in a separate 5-4 ruling, justices upheld the vaccine requirement for healthcare workers in facilities that get federal funding. Chief Justice John Roberts and Brett Kavanaugh joined the court's three liberals in that decision. The rulings come as the Omicron variant continues to spread rapidly across the country. According to Johns Hopkins University, the U.S. is reporting an average of 786,000 new infections per day over the last week. The Department of Health and Human Services says hospitalizations are up 27% over that same span. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to the Supreme Court decisions? Do you support vaccine mandates or not at the federal level, or should it be states, local governments, or maybe individual businesses that should make these decisions? Would you have been affected by the mandate for businesses or the one for healthcare workers? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Charlie Jacobs is a professor of political science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. He specializes in public law, judicial process, and American politics. Charlie, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Any surprises here, Charlie, in this pair of rulings?
Yeah, I don't think so. Because of the tilt that we've seen over the last few years towards a more conservative court, this really sort of fits in with their approach to administrative law and the application of discretion that's given to agencies like OSHA and the Department of Labor. So just because of the membership of the court, it doesn't seem unusual. I will say that some of their justifications for their ruling, I think, are a little brief and need some explication. And I think that's what the dissenters, in particular, in the National Federation of Independent Businesses case, the one that eliminated the mandate, or at least put a stay on the mandate, that's what they were really saying about the per curiam opinion here, was that it didn't really flesh out many of the reasons why the mandate wouldn't be permissible in this particular circumstance.
I want to read a couple snippets from the majority opinion, unsigned, but as you alluded, the six conservative, or generally described as conservative, justices voted to put that stay on that mandate. Here's a quote or two. Although Congress has indisputably given OSHA the power to regulate occupational dangers, it has not given that agency the power to regulate public health more broadly. And it went on, requiring the vaccination of 84 million Americans selected simply because they work for employers with more than 100 employees certainly falls in the latter category, a category of, I think, overreach and arbitrariness they were arguing. Is there something to that argument, that this goes beyond OSHA's power as authorized by Congress, and it unfairly distinguishes one kind of employee from another?
Well, this is probably one of the biggest debates within administrative law, and this is not a topic that usually lights everybody's world on fire to talk about these kinds of issues, sort of deep in the weeds of bureaucracy. But it's about what kind of discretion that agencies get, and when can they fill in the blanks of ambiguous legislation. So really what you saw was an argument here between the majority and the minority justices about how much latitude do you give the agency to create these kinds of rules and regulations when Congress isn't really specific. And so from the dissenters' point of view, these sort of emergency orders are exactly the kind of thing that Congress would expect OSHA to do, because no one can predict the future. When you offer these kinds of powers to an agency, what you're saying to them is, we're going to defer to you and your expertise to tell us when the federal government has to step in and help to mitigate these kinds of issues. And what the majority is saying is, well, If we do that, if we allow this kind of interpretation of vague, ambiguous phrases in the legislation, then in essence, what happens is OSHA substitutes itself for Congress. And Congress may have never intended for this kind of regulatory scheme to be created. And so that's sort of the pull and the tug of this debate. Both have merit. Both sides have merit here, because you don't want an agency to just be creating out of whole cloth their own perceptions about what the law should be. But at the same time, and this really comes through in Breyer's opinion, this is exactly the kind of thing you would expect to happen from OSHA. If you see, as we did at the outset of the pandemic, sort of meatpacking industry and the like, where you saw massive outbreaks and deaths caused by COVID, that this is the kind of remedy that we would expect OSHA to implement to make all workers, not just those in specific industries, safe.
From that minority ruling in this particular case, here's a quote. This ruling, quote, undercuts the capacity of the responsible federal officials acting well within the scope of their authority to protect American workers from grave danger. And that's the argument from the three liberal justices here. Yes, it may not be specifically outlined in Congress, the idea of a vaccine requirement from OSHA. It fits into OSHA's job, I guess, they say.
That's exactly right. And what they're trying to point out to the majority is a certain hypocrisy in their argument. So again, there is a valid argument to be made that agencies shouldn't be able to make up regulations that Congress never intended. That is superseding the authority of the legislative branch. But when the court steps in and says, no, the agency got it wrong, we got it right, they're doing the same thing. They're interposing their own view about how we should interpret ambiguous phrases in law and how they should be applied by the agencies in the executive branch. So what they're trying to do is kind of peel back a little bit of this hypocrisy, kind of, you know, pull back the curtain on the Wizard of Oz on the majority here, because they want to show that we have to defer whenever possible to what Congress may have intended and to allow a little latitude to these agencies to make sure they're protecting the public in these kinds of circumstances.
Talking to Charlie Jacobs, professor of political science at St. Norbert College, looking at this week's U.S. Supreme Court rulings blocking one vaccine mandate affecting employers from the Biden administration, the other Biden administration mandate for healthcare workers at places that get federal money, that was allowed to stand. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or questions about either or both of those decisions. Let's bring on a caller now. Scott is with us in Appleton. Scott, hi.
Hey, how you doing? You know, I find great irony, and it doesn't matter to me, liberal or conservative, that they're allowing the protection of the people that protect us once we get sick. Yet the masses aren't directed. I think we're in the crisis mode. I think we're going to be dealing with this for years and years. And who knows, the next variant, who knows what that could do. But I think it's just a shame that we had an opportunity to put a little heat on those that are unvaccinated. I know that's not politically correct. I don't care, because I look at the good of the whole rather than a handful of people that are digging their heels in.
Scott, thanks for the call. Charlie, Scott thinks it's okay for OSHA to use this to pressure the unvaccinated to get vaccinated. Is that it for the benefit, he says, of our overall healthcare system and healthcare workers? Is that something that justice has considered here?
I think that's one of the things that irked the dissent here. And there are two comments to be made about that. One, I think, is the point that this technically wasn't a vaccine mandate.
Right.
I mean, certainly that was going to be very likely the easiest way for compliance by businesses. But there was an opportunity where testing and masking could be used in lieu of vaccinations if there was objections by singular employees or by the company itself. But the other issue that was raised by the dissent was that in order to grant a stay, there are typically four elements that have to be met in order to grant the stay. That is to stop the enforcement of the particular rule or regulation. And the last one is, will the public interest be served if a stay is granted? And what Breyer and the others in the minority were arguing is, how could we say that the public interest is being served if we're going to allow unvaccinated people to avoid any mitigation of the potential of infecting other people? And so I think that sort of gels with what Scott was trying to argue here, is that there's a greater good, a community good, that the mandate was trying to create that the court seemed to overlook in some of its analysis.
Scott, thanks for the call. We're looking at the fallout from yesterday's U.S. Supreme Court rulings on President Biden's vaccine mandates with Charlie Jacobs, political science professor at St. Norbert College. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did the court get it right or wrong on either of both of the rulings? One for larger employers, which the court put a stay on, says the government can't enforce that. One for healthcare workers at facilities that get federal dollars. The court said, yeah, that one can go ahead. What do you think? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about yesterday's U.S. Supreme Court ruling on the Biden administration's vaccine mandates in a 6-3 decision along ideological lines. Justices put a stay on the requirement for private businesses with at least 100 employees, but in a 5-4 ruling, they upheld the mandate for healthcare workers at facilities that get federal funding. Charlie Jacobs stays with us, professor of political science at St. Norbert College, who studies the Supreme Court. And you could join in at 800-642-1234 with your reactions to those rulings, what they mean for you, if anything, or your questions for our guest. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go back to your calls now. Cyril is with us in Madison. Cyril, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Regarding the healthcare decision, that was one of the more rational decisions that the Supreme Court has made of late, although the 5-4 split is not encouraging. Regarding the business mandate, I think when President Biden instituted that mandate, he specified that the mandate was specifically to businesses with 100 or more employees, which gives me the idea that he was considering giving the small business environment a break from this mandate, and that it would be specifically the larger, presumably, companies who would be able to afford such a thing.
Got it. Cyril, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Let's talk about that. Why larger employees with the employers with over 100 employees, Charlie, before we move on to the healthcare worker part of this?
So one of the issue there has to do with the Supreme Court's understanding of what kind of business enterprise impacts interstate commerce, because Congress has the authority to regulate interstate commerce. And the notion is that larger businesses are going to have a larger impact and as a result are able to be regulated by Congress rather than businesses that are local and their business is primarily, if not exclusively, intrastate commerce. So while I don't disagree with Cyril that there might have been an intention that some smaller businesses are going to have a more difficult time conducting testing, providing masks, or requiring their employees to get the vaccine, at the same time, it has something to do with sort of the overarching doctrine of the Supreme Court and the application of federal authority over states and local businesses.
Thanks for that call, Cyril, at 800-642-1234. And Charlie, Cyril's first comment gets us to the other lawsuit, the one regarding healthcare workers at facilities, again, that get federal money. 5-4 decision upholding that. What did you see in the arguments on both sides?
The distinction I see between these two cases is that the court found in the first case regarding the businesses and the application there that the original statute from Congress, what you call the Organic Act, was too vague to be able to extend the powers to that kind of regulatory control. But what the court was saying in the case regarding the healthcare workers was that because of the statutes that deal with the provision of Medicare and Medicaid dollars to the states and the hospitals, that there is a scheme of regulatory care that needs to be met. And this is almost sort of a foundational element. If you don't have healthcare workers to provide the services required by Medicare and Medicaid, the entire system might collapse. So I think that what convinced at least a couple of more justices to pull towards supporting this particular mandate was that it fit more closely in with what Congress intended the program to do. The OSHA regulation, they argued, did not, because it was too intrusive into the business practices for these companies.
Now, the minority wrote here, this is Justice Alito, a group of four conservative justices in the minority, writing, quote, "I do not think that the federal government is likely to be able to show that Congress has authorized the unprecedented step of compelling over 10 million healthcare workers to be vaccinated on pain of being fired," end quote. What do you think of that argument? Again, like the OSHA decision, saying, yeah, this exceeds what Congress really authorizes here.
So embedded in these arguments that are going on here in both of these decisions is a much broader discussion that the court is having and, you know, political ideologies in the United States are having about the role and expanse of the federal government. So we've all heard that, you know, government's gotten too big, or the era of big government is here or over. That was from the Clinton administration. And part of what you're seeing here is an attempt by the more conservative members of the court to rein in the ability of agencies to regulate. And what Alito is saying there is, you can't act as a regulatory agency unless Congress specifically gave you the power. And that may sound reasonable, but the problem is that as we watch our Congress today fight over the smallest and largest kinds of issues, to expect that Congress is going to be able to draft a very large piece of legislation and be so specific that it covers every potential eventuality is unlikely. That's why discretion is often permitted in the way in which agencies create these rules, because if we didn't give them that this discretion, Congress, A, would have to be very specific and become very collegial very quickly, or the ability to regulate would almost be eliminated.
Go back to our callers. Scott is with us in Menominee. Scott, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Scott?
Well, on the case of the employers that, you know, with 100 or more employees, I think that was probably pretty good. You know, when you get more than 100, you're getting into the corporations, you know, multi-state kind of groups. They're going to shift stuff around anyway, like, I mean, throughout all the regulations, so they can, you know, go from state to state and do their thing that they usually do, maximize profit, and that's good. But and then plus, you know, I think, you know, as far as government goes, it's not really the government's job to protect us, you know, for everything either. There's got to be some kind of, you know, accountability. So you think even just some of these big companies would be like, hey, we're big and we can do this ourselves without the government, and we can, you know, slow spread, stop spread, what have you, you know.
Scott, thanks for the call. Scott's saying we can leave it to big companies to figure out what works for them for protecting health at the workplace.
And I think Scott may be onto something there, that, you know, we have to rely on each other to be able to do what's right for the community. And we don't always have to rely on government. I think in some circumstances, some companies and corporations were looking for cover, and the government was going to give them that cover instead of having to make the decision on their own and maybe take the slings and arrows from their local communities or their employees or their shareholders, for that matter, that if they said, well, the government is making us do this, that they had a built-in excuse for why they were doing it. So I think that there is something to be said for that as well, that's the kind of responsibility that we expect from government, is that they will lead because they have the resources to be able to do the research to tell us exactly what the most prudent approach is. Now, of course, there are those who are going to say, you know, we have to expect in different areas of the country with different kinds of businesses and industries with different imperatives that they should be able to figure out their own scheme to solve these problems on their own. So this is a debate that is central to American politics and has been for more than 200 years. And just because this is a once in a generation pandemic doesn't mean that these kinds of ideological issues are going to evaporate.
Scott, thanks for that call. Angela joins us now in Baraboo. Angela, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to call. It's less about the logic of the Supreme Court decision and more about the emotional aspect of some of the healthcare workers who are avoiding vaccination. I work in healthcare. My husband and I both had COVID. I nearly lost him. And I am vaccinated. and so is he. But I do also understand, because I have worked in hospitals for 30 years now, that there comes a time with each new disease. As a healthcare worker, you're constantly being tested for something. Once a year, you have to get TB, you have to get flu, you have to get this, you have to get that. And after so many years of doing it, you really feel like, wait a minute, this is my body. This is my biology. You know, I don't belong to anybody but myself. And so while I do vehemently encourage people to get vaccinated, because while you still might get sick, it will save your life. I do believe this. I can also understand why some healthcare workers are going, wait a minute. You know, no, this is one more thing, and I don't want to.
Angela, thanks a lot for that call. Charlie, nuanced thoughts there about our personal sovereignty over our bodies versus our own personal health and our, I guess, ability to protect other people's health.
And, you know, it goes back to the comment I made earlier about those four elements about whether or not a stay is going to be granted. The second of those is, will the party bringing the case suffer some sort of irreparable harm if there isn't a stay? And that, I think, is exactly what Angela is bringing up. If you have to get the vaccine, for some people, that's irreparable harm. And there's no way to undo that vaccination. And I think that's what the majority was looking at in this particular case. Are there other methods where we can avoid the transmission of this disease without forcing so many people, having this great economic and social impact? Are there other ways which we can accommodate these people? And I think that's in part what led them to the decision that they made.
Angela, thanks for the call. Charlie, you've emphasized this is a stay. Is there still court action going on, especially on the employer mandate?
Yeah, they can still bring a case, and it can have a full review before the court to determine whether or not the stay takes in place and that they overturn the rule or regulation, or where they lift the stay and allow it to continue. But the court has great discretion about whether or not they're going to hear a case in full. So we'll see whether or not the court offers that in the future. You need four votes, four of nine justices. You had six in the majority here. So there's a chance that this will not come to the court again.
Charlie, thanks as always for joining us today.
My pleasure, Rob.
That's Charlie Jacobs, professor of political science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. We talked to him today about the U.S. Supreme Court's rulings on a pair of vaccine mandates from the Biden administration, striking down effectively a requirement for large private businesses, upholding a similar order for certain healthcare workers. Coming up after the news, it's Food Friday. We'll talk about cooking resolutions or plans or ideas for the new year. You can get started right now. Let us know what you are planning to try to change up over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, inflation continued to rise in December, the highest it's been in decades. We'll talk to a Wisconsin business and economics professor about why it's been sticking around and what it means for our economy. Now, New Year's resolutions often focus around what kind of food we'll eat and how much of it. But for this week's edition of Food Friday, we want to hear about your resolutions or plans for the kitchen. How do you want to cook this year? Maybe you've been afraid to try making something different. The souffle, the poached eggs, handmade noodles, DIY croissants. You're going to try to do more vegetarian cooking or make the perfect steak on the grill. Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What's something you want to try cooking in 2022? How do you want to shake things up? Or is there something you picked up over the last couple of years, maybe some pandemic baking projects that have now become a part of your daily routine or weekly routine? You want to share it with others, maybe encourage them. You can join in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Maybe you just want to do more cooking, more home-cooked meals. Doesn't have to be fancy. Or maybe you're planning on doing less cooking, saving time, keeping things simple. Call in now. 800-642-1234 is the number to call with your cooking plans for 2022, big or small. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@WPR.org. Now, we got some stories from our colleagues here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Jason Butler, assistant to the director of radio here, wants to add more meals to his roster.
My 2022 cooking goal is to find two or three more meals that I can make for my kids and myself that are vegetarian and that we'll all enjoy. You know, I'm looking for meals that I can put into my regular rotation.
It wasn't vegetarian, but I definitely had that situation with various points with my kids. Like, you know, we've got some proven winners here, but you keep making them again and again, and somebody's going to get tired of them. Might be me, might be them. I don't know. Now let's hear from Muna Algathy, Education Engagement Specialist for Wisconsin PBS, a special dish to perfect this year.
The empathy fatigue that we're talking about on the physician support line now.
That's not the clip we wanted. Okay, well, it was mislabeled, but Muna's goal is to master cooking lamb biryani at home. Muna says, I've been experimenting for the past couple of weeks and things seem to be going in the right direction. We spend maybe a little too much money at Amber Cuisines over in Middleton on their fabulous lamb biryani. I'm doing my best to recreate it at home. Well, let's check out your cooking plans for 2022 at 800-642-1234. Donna starts us off in Verona. Donna, hello.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What are you going to make this year, Donna?
Yogurt.
Okay, now I've done this years and years ago. I borrowed a yogurt maker, but the first ingredient you get is yogurt. I had to use store-bought yogurt. You put it in this thing and you make more yogurt. How are you doing it?
Well, I think I'm going to get the starter. I ordered a starter to start the cream in it, and that's basically what we're waiting for. So it should be exciting to try making new yogurt. Last time I was there, I bought some in a glass jar for $1.50, and I thought, oh my gosh, I should be making this.
Now, do you consume lots yourself?
Yeah, our whole family consumes a lot of yogurt.
Okay. And is this all going to be plain and you eat it plain or use it for cooking, or are you going to experiment with flavored yogurts?
I think we're going to try everything.
Excellent. Well,
everything. Why not?
That sounds great. Well, good luck with your yogurt making, Donna. Let us know how it goes. Shoot us an email, ideas@wpr.org, after your first success or failure. Either way is good. Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go next to Jennifer in Oconomowoc. Jennifer, hi.
Hello. So we went out to eat around the holidays, and my husband loves pork chops, and he got a rather thick pork chop, and we got into the discussion of how do they make these so that they're cooked all the way through. So long story short, my husband ended up buying a sous vide, I think I'm saying that correctly, system, which I believe the restaurants use to do just that. And it kind of cracks me up because we really don't know what we're doing with it. Any suggestions?
I have never done sous vide myself, but we've had so many callers over the years and Food Friday guests who swear by it. So you have the kit in your hands now, Jennifer? You've received it? And have you taken it for a spin yet?
Yeah, we made one dinner with pork chops, and frankly, I thought that they were a little underdone, so we'll have to adjust. Yep, we'll have to adjust the temperature on that. Or the timing? No, the temperature.
Could be either.
I don't know. See, yeah.
All right. Well, Jennifer, you know, poke around online. I'm sure there's got to be YouTube videos giving you step-by-steps on that. Good luck with your sous vide. Yeah, we heard from Karina Abrego-Koch, outreach specialist for WPR, who says, I've been using Instant Pot for a few years, air fryer since 2018. Karina says, the next trendy kitchen device I want to try is sous vide. Have one. It's been in the box since last spring. So maybe if Karina has success, we can share that with you, Jennifer. Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We are asking for your cooking plans. You can call them resolutions if you want. Do people really make resolutions? But something you want to try to cook or cook better or cook more of in 2022, a new ingredient maybe, a new technique, a new style of cooking, 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's go back to your calls now. Jim is with us in Hartford. Jim, hi.
Hey, hello. I got into this habit so far this year every morning of just waking and baking. It's pretty awesome.
Now, are you literally baking cakes or are you being coy with us here, Jim? Jim dropped. Yeah, I think that was a bit of a prank. And that'd be a lot of cake to make if you're doing it every morning. We are looking for your actual cooking goals for 2022 at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Is there something new you want to try? A new cookbook you're planning to get a lot of mileage out of? Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or call 800-642-1234. We heard from Sheila Shigley, host of Simply Folk here, who says, I want to make stir fries in a real wok with smoking hot oil where everything ignites in a ball of garlicky fire, leaving you with seared veggie and tofu awesomeness. I used to have a wok, like not a very good one. But I got to say, my wife and I, we make stir fries, kind of like loosely Chinese style stir fries. And back in the day, we'd make them, they'd taste, you know, okay. And we tried different sauces, different spices, different heats, and they came out okay. They all taste about the same. That is one thing I want to do, is maybe hit the cookbooks, do some research, and try to make stir fries that are better than just okay. How about you? Do you have some advice for me? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Again, asking around here at WPR, we heard from Jennifer Dargan, Deputy Director of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board. JDAR wants to up her pasta game. Here's a listen.
I often order pasta primavera when I eat out, but I haven't been successful making it at home. So I've set out to try a bunch of different recipes until I find one that I love. The first one that I tried was from SeriousEats.com, and it turned out okay. Next, I'm going to try the New York Times recipe.
All right, pasta primavera. That sounds like a great project for the year. Let's go back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Rita is with us in Spooner. Rita, hi.
Hi.
What are you going to work on, Rita?
How are you doing?
Good. How are you? What are you going to work on this year?
I'm going to learn how to make Reuben soup.
Reuben soup. Now, is that like a Reuben sandwich, but in soup form?
Yeah, in soup form. So it'll have corned beef and it'll have sauerkraut, Swiss cheese, cream. I hope it's good. I mean, I had it one time at a restaurant up in Hayward, and it was delicious. But I've never been able to make it, but I'm going to try this year.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen that in soup form. You had it up in Hayward, you said. Now, it was pretty good?
Yes, it was excellent. It was at Angler's Inn.
Well, maybe call them and see if they can give you their recipe. Are you making it up, or did you find a recipe?
I've kind of found a recipe, but I'll probably make it up too.
Excellent. Well, good luck. I like a good Reuben sandwich. I'd probably like a good Reuben soup. A Reuben sandwich and Reuben soup. That's probably a little too much, though, at the same time. Good luck, Rita. We'll go now to Becky in Waterford. Becky, hi.
Hi there. This is so exciting you guys are talking about this, because for the last month or so, I've been doing some research on new pots and pans, because the ones I have are just awful. Everything sticks and my food just gets burned, and I'm blaming the pans, not me. But so I'm going to, as it happens, to an outlet store at Johnson Creek tomorrow to buy new pans from a company called Le Creuset from France. And they're kind of pricey, but Wisconsin has two outlets. And everywhere I look on YouTube and reviews, they all say that they're one of the top tier cast iron and cast iron enamel pans. So I'm hoping to get a good deal and kind of revamp how I cook.
All right. And what is your first recipe on your new pots and pans, do you think, going to be?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. But given the fact that it's winter and I'm a big fan of soups and stews, and I'm hoping to get a Dutch oven, I'm probably going to do what I like is split pea soup.
Oh, a great winter food. Oh, that sounds great, Becky. Good luck. Happy hunting for a deal on those pots and pans. Thanks for calling in. We are talking about cooking resolutions, plans, notions, ambitions for this new year of 2022. Looking for your calls at 800-642-1234. Our own Maureen McCollum, executive producer of Wisconsin Life, has a simple goal. She says, eat less cheese directly out of bag, put on chip, and cook it instead. Hashtag realistic goals. Yeah, sometimes I just like the cheese right out of the container. Sometimes I'll get out the crackers too. How about you? What is your ambition, big or small? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800 646-642-1234. New style of cooking, new entree, maybe something you've learned in the last couple of years you want to take up a notch, as they say. 800-642-1234 is the number. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. It is Food Friday, and we're picking up our talk about New Year's cooking resolutions, goals, ambitions. We want to hear how you are hoping to switch it up in the kitchen this year. Still time for your story at 800-642-1234. Do you want to use more of something in your cooking, less of something in your cooking? Try something new that you thought was too complicated to try, but you want to master it anyway. Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Back to your calls now. Joe is on the line in Green Bay. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I want to try this year. I love cooking Thanksgiving meals. It's just a big big stress reliever for myself. At any rate, I'm going to try a totally meatless Thanksgiving meal. So and I don't know how I'm going to do it.
Well, I want to ask Joe, so you're making Thanksgiving meals not just on Thanksgiving Day, it sounds like.
Not just on Thanksgiving meal, on Thanksgiving Day. No, that's just, I wait all year for that one day, yes. But I do it like 3, 4 times, 5 times. Unfortunately, this past Thanksgiving, I was down with bronchitis.
Oh.
And the rest of the family, they ate hot dogs.
Oh, no, because you weren't there to cook. All right, well, you can make up for it this year, Joe. Do you have notions on how to get on what you want to do to be the centerpiece, the meatless centerpiece, if you're doing a meatless Thanksgiving version?
I'm still working on that. It's going to be interesting. But I'm thinking possibly some type of plant-based meat as a possible starter. But we'll see. Just as long as it doesn't turn out to look like a bunch of raisin, that would be very bad.
All right, I got to ask one thing, though, Joe, before I let you go. You said cooking these Thanksgiving-style meals is a stress reliever for you. I think a lot of people are in the position of making Thanksgiving dinner where it's a stress enhancer. Why is it a relaxing thing for you?
Oh, God. For how many times I get a phone call from a friend on or just before Thanksgiving, Joe, come and save me. Oh, my word. There was one time I was at one of the local grocery stores, and there was like a it was a new packer. I won't say who it was. Him and his wife on Thanksgiving Eve looking for not frozen turkey. and they were like, boy, I wish I had time. I'd give you mine. I can handle a frozen turkey, you know, if I'm allowed to use the chainsaw. But I felt really for the guy. I gave him all the tips. I did tell him where to find thawed out, but it might be picked through turkey already. But
he needed a better game plan. Joe, thanks a lot for that call. Lord. At 800-642-1234. Let's go next to Cam on the line in Madison. Cam, hi.
Hey, Rob, how are you?
Good. What's your plan, Cam?
Oh, my plan is to do a little bit more wild game and foraged food cooking this year.
Ooh, okay. What kind of things are you going to be foraging for?
Well, I had a pretty successful ramp season this last year, so I'm hoping to get some more ramps again this year and hoping to get some mushrooms, morels, chanterelles, stuff like that.
Excellent. You could drop some of those ramps off on my porch, okay?
Oh, I've got some in the freezer. I'll hook you up.
Okay. And what do you like to do with ramps? I like a ramp pesto I've made. I use them. I saute them with a lot of different meals. What's your favorite use of a good ramp?
So I like to pickle the bulbs. We've made a lot of pesto. I like ramp butter. I dry out the leaves, make ramp salt.
That sounds fantastic. Well, happy foraging this year, Cam. Thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. It's Food Friday, and you are our guest today. We're asking for your plans for cooking in 2022. What is something you want to do more of, as Cam did there, or something you want to try maybe for the first time? Do you have a new cookbook you want to take for a spin this year and learn some new stuff from it? A new ingredient you'd like to try, new to you, I'm guessing. 800-642-1234 is the number to call in. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post over on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@WPR.org. Oh, look, we got a couple emails. Grant emailed a tip. Sheila Shigley was talking about her stir fries. Grant says, assuming you have a good recipe, the success to stir frying is having a very large fire under your wok. A very large, all caps, fire. Grant seems really enthusiastic about the fire element of stir frying. But yeah, you're supposed to do it really hot, as I understand it. Grant, thanks for that. Anne in Madison emailed, she's going to try a theme of whipped egg whites, cloud eggs, fried eggs where the whites are whipped. I've never seen that. Or those tall, fluffy Japanese souffle pancakes. Interesting. Now, I separate out egg whites and whip them. My favorite thing for that, of course, is my waffles. You beat those egg whites, man. It makes them fluffy, really good. Yeah, I got to do more of that, actually. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are you hoping to accomplish in the kitchen this year? Yeah, it's a little late for New Year's resolutions, but we're doing them anyway at 800-642-1234. Oh, we got a lot more comments from our WPR colleagues. Better read a couple. Judith Marie Heise, WPR's digital marketing manager, says, my husband does the cooking in our house, and he's challenged himself to one new recipe a week. Oh, I love that. A recipe of the week challenge. Last week, he made Jerusalem-style mixed grilled chicken. It was so crazy good. We're trying not to eat it again this week. Why would you try not to make it again? Also, I got the book, Judith says, on pie for Christmas and want to start working my way through it. Use the apple pie recipe from it this fall. It was outstanding. Need more pie in my life, Judith says, in 2022. I do like a good pie. Bring some in, Judith. That reminds me, one of my things that I'm kind of resolving to do. So if you listen a lot, you know I have a weird thing with cinnamon, and I shouldn't eat it. Doesn't kill me, but it's not good. But there's a lot of kinds of food that I love that have cinnamon. Indian food, a lot of Middle Eastern food, some Mexican food. So I'm going to try to do more of like replicating those things at home, but leaving out the cinnamon. Your turn at 800-642-1234. We've got John with us in Eau Claire. John, hi.
Hello. Yeah, I do a lot of smoking meat.
Uh-huh.
And the one that I've got to do now, do you know what a fatty is in regard to smoking?
I don't. Fill me in.
It's pretty much a modified meatloaf. You take a pound of bacon, you weave a mat, then you put like ground meat on there and you put your insert, whatever you're going to put on the inside.
Wow.
And then you roll it up like a cinnamon roll, smoke it for about 3 hours.
So we got bacon woven and wrapped around beef or whatever ground meat and other stuff. And then you smoke it. That sounds amazing, John.
Yeah.
Have you done this before?
Yeah, I've done like 30 or 40 and not one of them the same. I did one for my sister that loves dill pickles but don't eat red meat. So I use ground turkey, ham sandwich meat, cream cheese, and a dill pickle. Roll that up in like a cinnamon roll and smoke that. The one I have to try this year is a chicken cordon bleu. You take boneless, skinless chicken breast, pound it flat, and then put that on top of the bacon and then put ham and cheese in there and smoke it.
Oh, my God. John, this sounds great. When's your cookbook coming out, man?
I just cook a lot. I drive a truck, so my fiance picks stuff that she wants for the weekend, and I got about 200 cookbooks, so I have to find what the recipe is. So we did beef stroganoff. I couldn't find a recipe. I actually found the Russian recipe for it. So
that's amazing.
We've done a lot of European cooking.
That sounds fantastic, John. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Wow. That sounds, it almost makes me want to get a smoker now. I feel like I'd use it a couple times and not that much. Thanks for that call, John, at 800-642-1234. WPR membership director Joanna Gulke says, my partner and I want to up our cooking skills, especially knife skills this year. I see YouTube video date nights in our future about this. Let's bring on one more caller. Mark is with us in Two Rivers. Mark, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What are you working on, Mark?
So right around the Christmas time, my wife and I started home canning dried pinto beans and black beans. So they're in pint jars, and it tastes so much better than what you get at the grocery store. It takes a little bit of work, but it's cheaper and it tastes better. Other thing we started doing is trying a lot more recipes from ATK as well.
America's Test Kitchen. Yes, frequent guests on this show, and they put those recipes to the test. Mark, what are you making with those beans this weekend before I let you go?
We fill them in with four tacos. We make our own refried beans. We add them to chili. So there's a lot of different things we do with them.
Fantastic. Mark, thanks so much for your call. Thanks to everyone who called in. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much for sharing your cooking goals, your resolutions for the new year. If you have one to share but you didn't have time to call, that's okay, because you can still head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let us know what you are going to be working on in the kitchen, on the grill, on the smoker. You name it, put that on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up Monday on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, a Milwaukee museum has told the story of Black history in the U.S. for years but faced financial struggles along the way. Visit America's Black Holocaust Museum. Get a preview of a reopen next month. That's Monday morning on the Ideas Network. It's ice fishing season here in Wisconsin, and if you're a fan of the sport, you probably have your favorite spot where there are fish aplenty under the ice. But how's this for a new ice fish discovery? A spot under the ice with 60 million fish nests. But you have to go to Antarctica to find it. As reported by CNN, a new report in the journal Current Biology reveals the discovery of a vast colony of these fish called ice fish, over 90 square miles under a frozen sea off the Antarctic coast. Researchers involved and other scientists say they didn't expect to see anywhere near that many fish in what should be a hostile environment. One key, these ice fish have unique blood. They're the only vertebrates that have no red blood cells. Their blood is copper-based instead of iron, and it's kind of evolved an antifreeze in their blood that keeps it from crystallizing at low temperatures. Ice fishers, don't get too excited. I'm not sure if these guys are good eating, and I'm not sure where you'd get a license from down there. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.